Wow. Well, we are a country that loves our Fridays, right? We love Friday, TGIF. Thank God it's Friday, because Friday represents the hard is over and the party's beginning, right? Weekend warriors getting tuned up on Friday night because the weekend is over. 2,000 years ago, it wasn't so. Friday wasn't so great. You know, looking back, we've developed a tradition in which we call that Friday Good Friday. But it's only the advantage of retrospect that allows us to call it good. On that Friday, it didn't look so good. We love Black Friday. Black Friday is the day that every business who's successful pays all their bills and puts themselves in the black for the entire year. That's why it's called Black Friday. We love Friday. But 2,000 years ago, Friday wasn't the beginning of something, it was the end of something. And a small band of men and women lost everything on that Friday. It wasn't an explosion, it was an implosion. And everything that they had sacrificed for, everything they believed in, everything that mattered to them, all came crashing in. It was over. And you know the story. They scattered. They lost their dearest friend and rabbi. They watched him executed in the most hideous fashion. They lost themselves, they lost one another, and I believe they even lost their faith for a while. Friday. We have Fridays too. You might be in the middle of a Friday. Feels like the world imploded around you. The fire came through and scorched everything, and now you stand in the middle of ashes with nothing green as far as your eye can see. It's Friday. And it will be only the retrospect viewed through the eyes of faith that in the future will enable you to look back and see your Friday is good. Today we begin a series that leads us up to Easter that we're calling the 3 days of Easter: Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. But each day has its own challenges, its own events, its own occurrences. And we want to just stop and not tell the end of the story. We want to experience that day the way it was as we look forward to Resurrection Sunday. And I think that as we go through each day, you'll see that each one of those days in their uniqueness kind of symbolizes seasons of our lives. You know, Jesus told his followers that this Friday was coming. He said, "The Son of Man will be betrayed to the chief priests and the teachers of the law, and he will be flogged and mocked and crucified. So you stay alert. Be on your guard, because you're next on the list. Because eventually you will be brought before synagogues and rulers and authorities. Your Friday is coming." You know, the whole thing got started because Jesus began to be a problem. Not like a nagging little problem, but a really big problem, a real problem. At first, he was just kind of an annoyance, like so many other subjects to the Roman Empire. He's just kind of like a fly that you have to swat at. But then Jesus started upsetting everybody's apple cart, and they didn't like it. I mean, the miracles at first were okay. I mean, if nothing else, it cut down on healthcare costs, right? But he kind of started flaunting it in the face of the Pharisees. And he started telling people, go back and tell the Pharisees what I did for you. And so the little law infractions along the way were no big deal, but pretty soon he started striking at what was really important to the Empire of Rome. He started getting into their pocketbook because it became questionable whether he was not paying his taxes. Is this man paying his taxes and his little band of followers? They seem to be gathering money and doing stuff with it, and we're not getting our fair share. And that is Rome's bread and butter. That is no bueno for Rome, because the regional and worldwide rule was meant to be profitable, if nothing else. But as long as he was low-key, he wasn't an issue. Until one day something happens that puts him on their radar in a way that he had never been before. They realize just before Passover that this man really has a huge following. And he comes to Jerusalem and a big parade breaks out and the whole city was stirred. "Who is this?" they asked. And crowds went ahead of him with an entourage shouting, "Hosanna! Hosanna to the Son of David. Blessed he who comes in the name of the Lord." And this threatened the chief priests. And threaten is always a good reason to reject the truth. I mean, if the people start listening to Jesus, we won't just lose our position, we will lose our livelihood. And so they saw the wonderful things that he did and the children shouting in the temple area, "Hosanna to the Son of David." And they were indignant. "Do you hear what these children are saying?" they asked him. In other words, you should be embarrassed of yourself. And by the way, why do you eat with sinners? You know, it's funny. Not like ha-ha funny, but funny in the sense that the people who had the biggest beef with the Son of God were the religious leaders. So they start interrupting him as he teaches. Jesus entered the temple courts, and while he was teaching, the chief priests and the elders of the people came to him. And they asked him, "By what authority do you teach these things? And who gave you this authority?" Notice that they didn't ask whether he was right. They asked him who gave him the right. And Jesus starts gaming them and playing his mind-bending spiritual jiu-jitsu on them. And he says, "I'll tell you what, instead of answering your question, I'll ask you a question. And if you answer me, I will tell you by what authority I'm doing these things. John's baptism, where did it come from? Was it from heaven or from men?" And they discussed it among themselves, and they said, "If we say from heaven, he will ask them, 'Why didn't you believe him?' And if we say from men, we are afraid of the people, for they all hold that John was a prophet." So they answered Jesus, "We don't know." Dang. And from that day on, no one dared ask Jesus any more questions. And then Jesus started teaching in parables, kind of like to obscure his truth so that only his disciples would understand. It was kind of a spiritual pig Latin, if you will. Ex ne on the guy Pharisees ne. Right? But it didn't work, because when the chief priests heard him teach in parables, they knew he was talking about them. And so they looked for a way to arrest him, but they were afraid of the crowd because the people held that he was a prophet. And so the Pharisees are caught in a trap with no way out. But it's not because they love him too much, baby. The Pharisees went out and laid plans to trap him in his words. And if we can't get him theologically, then we'll get him politically. "Tell us then, what is your opinion, Jesus? Is it right to pay taxes to Caesar or not?" And to make matters worse, instead of ignoring them or toying with them, Jesus begins confronting them. knowing their evil intent, he said to them, "You hypocrites, why are you trying to trap me?" In other words, I see what you're doing. And then Jesus goes on the offensive. And I'm sure his followers at this time are just saying, "Man, can you just tone it down a little bit?" He starts warning the people. And he says to the crowds and his disciples, "The teachers of the law and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat. So you must obey and do everything they tell you. But do not do what they do, for they do not practice what they preach. They tie up heavy loads and put them on men's shoulders, but they themselves, they're not willing to lift a finger to move them. And everything they do is done for men to see." Then he starts confronting the Pharisees directly. "Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites! You shut the kingdom of heaven in men's faces, and you yourselves do not enter, nor will you let those enter who are trying to." He steps it up. "You're blind fools. You strain out a gnat but swallow a camel. You clean the outside of the cup and dish, but inside you're full of greed and self-indulgence. You're snakes. You're condemned to hell. You kill the innocent and oppose God. You play ball like a girl. So he must be eliminated, erased." And so they looked for some way to get rid of Jesus. But you know, these things, they have to be handled very delicately. And so they plotted to arrest Jesus in some sly way and kill him. And as they scratched their head and stroked their beards trying to come up with a plan, Judas went to the high priests and the officers of the temple guard and discussed with them how he might betray Jesus. Don't you love it when a plan comes together? "What are you willing to give me if I hand him over to you?" Do you think the Pharisees counted their blessings with this fortuitous opportunity? They were delighted and agreed to give him money. And so 1, 2, 3. The phrase 30 pieces of silver will never mean the same thing. And so as Judas walked away from that little secret meeting, his pockets were jingling. Not with jingle bells, but betrayal bells. And from then on, Judas watched for an opportunity to hand him over. And all of this is so confusing and disorienting to the people. Who's right? Who do we follow? We have Jesus, our beloved rabbi, and he's opposing what everything that we've known and everything that we've trusted. And Jesus looks on them in their ignorance with compassion and says, "Jerusalem, Jerusalem, you who kill the prophets and stone those sent to you, how often I've longed to gather your children together as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, but you are not willing." He assures that his closest disciples are clear on what to do. And he warns them. He says, "Watch out that no one deceives you." And so as the Passover comes, called such out of reference of the 10th and final plague when the Israelites escaped, were delivered from Egypt because the angel of death passed over those homes that had the blood on the lintel over the house. And part of that celebration is that they eat unleavened bread because they had to leave so quickly, they did not have time to even let their bread rise. And so Jesus tells Peter and John, "Book us a room for dinner." And in what we know is the Last Supper, he sits down with them and he says, "I have eagerly desired to eat this Passover with you before I suffer. This is his moment with his closest followers, and he's looked forward to this. This time. And while they were eating, Jesus took bread and gave thanks and broke it and gave it to his disciples, saying, "Take and eat. This is my body." And then he took the cup and he gave thanks and offered it to them, saying, "Drink from it, all of you. This is the blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many for the forgiveness of sins." But by the way, one of you will betray me. Is it me? Who is it? One will betray, but all will fall away. And Peter replied, "Even if all fall away on account of you, I never will." Yeah, right. I think we all know how that turns out. Cock-a-doodle-doo, bro. All of the weight of this falls on the shoulders of Jesus, so he retreats to the Mount of Olives to pray. And there he says to his followers, "My soul is overwhelmed with the sorrow to the point of death." And as he prays, there's a commotion. And a band of men, no, a crowd arrives, sent by the chief priests and elders with clubs and swords. You gotta love that. No subtlety there. And going at once to Jesus, Judas said, "Greetings, Rabbi," and kissed him. Then seizing him, they led him away and took him into the house of the high priest. And Peter followed at a distance. And all the disciples deserted him and fled. Then Jesus pulls the ultimate all-nighter. It's trials, trials, trials. If you can call them trials. Aren't trials supposed to determine guilt, assign responsibility, and administer justice? The chief priests and the whole Sanhedrin, though, were looking for false evidence against Jesus so that they could put him to death, but they did not find any. Jesus is not the first nor the last to endure bogus justice. Because somebody doesn't like the way you look or what you say or how they feel about what you say or you teach. How is it that people go so far to use justice to apply injustice? The only difference in this story is that it's part of a master plan. The justice, the injustice, being endured so that those applying it will be justified. So Jesus stands before the high priest with religious accusations. He's a terrorist, threatening to destroy our religious sites. He's a nut job. He says he's the Son of God. Ridicule, spit, slap. "I'm not out of order. You're out of order." And Peter's in the shadows. Cock-a-doodle-doo. Then he stands before Pilate and Herod with political accusations. "So you're not paying your taxes, huh? You're a king?" "Oh, yeah. King of the Jews." "Riddle me this, king. Do a trick for me." And Pilate is conflicted. But it seems that power trumps justice every time. Frederick Buechner depicts Pilate as a chain-smoking, stressed-out, ruthless politician with shaking, nicotine-stained hands that he attempts to wash himself of this whole matter. And he says to this crowd, I have found no basis for your charges against him. And in his mind, you can hear him thinking, I don't need this. And to the crowd, he says, will you please shut up? No. Release Barabbas. The crowd's out of control. Crucify him, they shout, or we will tell Caesar. And faced with his boss, hearing about yet another uprising and the threat that he could lose his position because he can't take care of his business, Pilate relents in that moment and he shouts, crucify him.
They came for him at evening. We found ourselves fast asleep, but we were stirred by his rebuke. We wiped the sleep from our eyes and looked to see a militia armed with clubs and swords and spears. They were led by Judas, one of our own. We looked to him for answers, but he approached Jesus and kissed him. And at that moment, they seized him and they marched him out of the garden. Fast forward. Now he stands before Pilate, a governor torn between insurrection and innocence. Confused by the claims of the Jewish leaders, he seeks understanding. I found no reason to charge this man, but the Pharisees have fed on the fear of the masses. They stir them to volley back. Crucify him! Crucify him! Pilate paces distraught, releases the Son of the Father, but turns over the Son of Man into the hands of people who have forgotten the promises. They cloak him in robes of royalty. A crown of thorns is jammed atop his forehead. They spit in his face. They mock him. They bow down in false fealty. Here kneels the King of the Jews. 40 lashes minus one await him. They burst his skin. They mangle his flesh. They've broken his body, but his spirit has not weakened. And then they march him to death's hill, making him carry his own murder method. They hammer nails into his hands and his feet. We had to invent a new word to describe this type of pain. Excruciate. There he hangs, his hands outstretched upon this hill, and we hide our faces away. They cannot know who we are. This is the man we followed for 3 years, and now he hangs from a criminal's tree. If this is the punishment for prophets, what's to come of his disciples like me? But this is Jesus. This is the man we've seen heal hundreds. We've seen him feed thousands. He raised Lazarus from the dead. Surely he can pull himself from this penalty. Surely he can come down from the cross. And even as we begin to wonder, darkness stretches across the ground. The presence of God is in this place. It was in a cloud that he led the Israelites. It was in a cloud that he revealed himself to Moses. And it will be in a cloud that he saves our teacher from this punishment. And at that moment, our Jesus stirred. He lifted his head and he screamed, Eli, Eli, lema sabachthani, my God, why have you forsaken me? And at that moment, we knew. Our teacher won't be saved here. And he won't be coming down that cross. This is the end of us all. And he looked us in the eyes and whispered, it is finished. And we beat our chests in mourning. And they pulled his body down. We saw where they lay him. They rolled a stone in front and put guards at the side so we couldn't take him in the night. But who are we? Who are we? We're nothing more than a band of outcasts. Nothing more than a crew of failures. And he was nothing more than another man. He was nothing more than another false prophet in whom we misdirected our faith for 3 years. For 3 years we spent with him. 3 years we followed him. His dust covers our feet, and here we are, no closer than we started. This is the end of us all.
Prayer team, if you'll make your way to the front. Friday. On Friday, it wasn't good. And it's only with eyes of faith that it can be called good. In fact, with eyes of faith, it's greater than good. It's beyond our imagination. I know that some of you, it's Friday for you. And as you look around, you feel like it's over. We want to offer a place for you to come and pray, to be prayed with, if you'd like. For some of you, what we talked about today might have just pricked your soul in a way that it never has been. And you say, you know, I want to know more about this Jesus. These folks that are here in the front are available to answer your questions or to pray with you. I want you to know that you can get a chronology of all the verses that I referred to in the story today by going to our website and looking up our sermon notes, and it's all there for you. If you would like to take the next couple of weeks and read those passages yourself leading up to Easter Sunday, I think that would be a great way to remind ourselves what it means to be a follower of Jesus. I look forward to seeing you all next week. And the title of that sermon is Saturday. God bless you. Have a great week.